Today's program has been brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit cane5.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Yo, 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 this is Eddie Schumard coming to you live from the HeritageRadioNetwork.org studios at Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, with another installment of Summer of Food. This summer we've been talking to student leaders from all over the country as they engage in food, agriculture, food systems, drinks, from sustainable ranches out west to healthy eating youth programs right here in Brooklyn, New York. Today I have the pleasure of talking with Anna Meyer, a communications intern at Food and Water Watch, working with the food team. She's a graduate student at the American University in their dual degree program in Natural Resources and Sustainable Development and International Affairs with the UN-mandated University of Peace in Costa Rica. She has a BA in Communications and a minor in Environmental Studies from California Lutheran University, and she loves to bake. Anna, thanks so much for being on with me today.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So give me and the listeners a little bit of some background. What exactly are you studying at American University right now? Give us an idea of what Natural Resources and Sustainable Development Program is all about.
Yeah, so it's all about kind of concern for our natural resources and where they stand, and then how countries and even our own country can develop and do it in a sustainable manner with concern for the environment and protecting their natural resources.
Cool. So one of the things I like to do is, because the word sustainability is one of those words that's, you know, and whenever I say it, we all laugh, and it's because it is. It's one of those words that's sort of been co-opted, and it has so many ambiguous definitions. So I really like to kind of give, you know, whoever I'm talking to the chance to define sustainability in their world. So what does sustainability and sustainable development mean to you?
Definitely. To me, it's about longevity, creating a system that is going to continue and that is going kind of to protect the resources so that they last, so something that's long-lasting. And so sustainable development is finding a way for countries to move forward, and but to do so in a way that conserves the resources and will allow them, you know, kind of not to make the same mistakes that more industrialized countries have made.
Right, like us.
Yes.
So within that larger heuristic, like, what is your focus within, you know, natural resources and sustainable development?
So my personal interest is really in food and agriculture. It's one of those areas that kind of crosses every boundary. I mean, it involves so much, and we all have to eat. And it's a huge, you know, decision for developing countries to decide, you know, whether to switch from industrialized agriculture or whether to, like, stay with traditional methods. So there's a lot in that field, and it's really interesting.
So, you know, how did you first become interested in food and agriculture? Do you come from, like, an agricultural background? You know, give us sort of a perspective on why is it food and agriculture that kind of excites you?
Yeah, I kind of come from an agriculture background. My dad grew up on a farm in Wisconsin, and both my parents are from the Midwest, but I'm actually from Orange County, California, which is like the exact opposite. But I grew up with, you know, parents who are really interested in, like, gardening in the backyard and compost piles, and we belong to a food co-op, and we ate whole wheat flour when nobody else did, which at the time didn't really mean anything to me. But when I was in undergrad, I took a class on environmental ethics, and it was like the first time I had heard about industrial agriculture or the name Monsanto, and I was just so compelled by it and fascinated by how deep and intense the issue is and how much it's about, like, social justice and ethics as well. And then I just continued to study about it as I've gotten into grad school.
I mean, it really is, you know, that kind of quote unquote rabbit hole. I mean, once you dig into it, you're like, oh my God, this is everywhere. It touches everything.
Yeah, it's never ending.
Yeah. So, and that kind of brings up a good point. It's like, do you see food and agriculture as a way for young people to engage in these larger social, cultural, and political issues?
I definitely do. There is so much out there right now, and there's so many different groups and people working in food and agriculture, but from really different perspectives, because, you know, it's something that's a local issue, it's something that's a national issue and an international issue, so there are so many opportunities. And you can take it and be like, well, I'm really interested in food and agriculture, but I'm also really interested in, like, oil dependency. So, and there's such a strong connection between those two. So it's really something that you can, like, specialize to your interest.
Right. So have you ever, like, engaged in agriculture? I mean, have you ever worked on a farm or gardened or any of that stuff? Or are you more interested in the policy, access, poverty, social issues side of the game? And not to say that those are totally separate beasts, because they're all intertwined, but...
Yeah, no, I have done some gardening, and I haven't worked on, like, a big farm, but part of my grad program is in Costa Rica, and we had the opportunity to, like, replant mangrove forests and do some of that. And when I was in D.C., I worked with some school gardens, and I took a class that involved gardening at my undergraduate. So I haven't had as much opportunity as I have wanted to actually, like, get in the dirt and get muddy, but it's definitely something that I'm interested in. And I feel like if you're going to be studying about food and working with it, you should, you know, you should be watching it grow and actually actively participating in the food movement that way too.
Right. So do you see, like, you know, the urban agriculture movement that's sort of kind of, you know, really getting its steam right now and moving along? Do you see that, you know, one of the benefits as that engagement side, like, it's a chance for people to participate in the production of food? Or do you see it as a way that we can actually feed people? Because that's, you know, those one of the debates sort of going on around urban agriculture right now.
I think it's both, and I think they're equally valid. I think it's a huge thing for, like, a kid to grow up actually knowing what the top of a carrot looks like. Like, I was at a school garden, and the kids couldn't find the carrots because they didn't know that they had green leafy stuff on top. And, like, that is so valuable in itself, and to actually just have that connection. But I think, I mean, the reality is that you can grow a lot of food in your backyard, and it's a way to augment your grocery shopping, and it's definitely a way to feed people.
Absolutely. I've had a similar experience with kids and carrots. I was on a farm, and a kid pulled a carrot out of the ground, and he looked around and said, "Who put this carrot in the ground?" It was like he had no idea that that's how carrots grew. It was like my, I mean, but conversely, I've been with adults who have seen, you know, peas and beans growing on vines, and it's blown their minds.
No, I mean, even I study food. I had that moment in Costa Rica. I saw pineapples growing, and I thought they grew in trees. I definitely did, and they do not.
No, I had the same thing with Brussels sprouts. I was like, what? That's what they look like? It's a stalk? Crazy. So let's kind of tuck it a little bit into what you're doing this summer at Food and Water Watch. So what's your role? What's your day-to-day like over there?
Yeah, so I'm a communications intern. That's my background. And I mostly work with the food team and in traditional media. So I do a lot with press releases and media outreach through advisories and pitching journalists to try to cover our events and to cover, you know, new releases on studies and new regulations. And so some of the issues I've been working on this summer is we just released a report on superweeds. And so we've been working on that. And then the Farm Bill update this summer has been crazy. And we've been tracking that and trying to gain support for more Farm Bill. And then just there's just been tons of food policy updates, you know, with arsenic and apple juice regulations and the USDA new school nutrition standards. So kind of the gist of it.
So you talked, you mentioned the Farm Bill, and that has been, somebody said that the Farm Bill, it's like they felt like Groundhog Day. It's like every day you wake up and you try to write the Farm Bill, and the next day you wake up and do it all over again. You know, how, what are your sort of perceptions on the Farm Bill and the process and the holdup, and And where do you hope that we end up at the end of the day when we have an actual farm bill, if we get to that point? And that's a
great,
big question.
If we ever do.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it is. Our current extension of the 2008 Farm Bill expires on September 30th, and right now it's a mess up there in D.C. But, I mean, the Farm Bill is so important, and I don't think, you know, the everyday person wouldn't assume that it has any effect on them, because you just think it, you know, affects some farmer in Iowa, but it has everything to do with everything that we eat and with nutrition standards and with conservation standards and EPA regulations and you know, food stamp programs. So, like, the nutrition aspect is huge. And I think, it is so important. And I definitely think there, like, is a positive side to it, and it has the potential. You know, if there was a fair farm bill, it would be huge for feeding people and improving access and improving, you know, outlooks for farmers. You know, in a time when we're losing farmers, the Farm Bill has the potential to support beginning farmers and to support local and organic programs. But it definitely is stalled right now. And I think it's really disheartening to see, because it's such like a bipartisan split, what's happening in the House, and that it's kind of lost track of what it is. Because, I mean, ultimately, it's about food, and it's about making sure that there's food and there's fair food and access to food, and that's kind of not what its current focus is. Right now, it's an industry bill. So,
right.
Kind of my perspective.
Yeah, and a lot of people might not know, you mentioned that September 30 deadline date. If there isn't a new farm bill passed, and correct me if I'm wrong, we revert back to, what, a 1945 bill, correct?
Yeah, that's right now, so
milk prices would, like, go ahead. I'm sorry, I'm interrupting. Yeah,
no, it's, yeah, you're right. The prices would drop, so all the regulations drop back to the 1940s, and that's actually one of the concerns of the House bill, that the split bill that got passed, is that it removes the permanent law. So far, the permanent law has been kind of what's forced Congress to vote and renew a farm bill every 5 years, because they're so afraid of this, you know, going back to the 1940s law. But if that piece does get removed, they'll kind of have no reason to renew the farm bill as it needs renewing.
Which might be even more frightening.
Yes.
So you mentioned, you know, sort of how a lot of folks don't quite understand the ramifications of the farm bill. Is, you know, food and agriculture and this kind of conversation, a conversation that you're having with your peers and, you know, people that are your age that you're having in school, or your friends that might not be involved directly in food and agriculture? Is this a conversation that's being had with young people?
I think it is for, you know, there's a growing movement, I would say, of young people who are just becoming more concerned with environment and politics and with issues in general and want to see justice. And so I think with those people it is, but I definitely think, you know, with your average college or graduate student who has really no connection to the environment or regulations and things like that, it's definitely a harder topic to approach, because it's really easy to not pay attention to it and not know, because you're still going to have food in the grocery store. And our country's so big, and those things seem so far away. Like, what is your connection to a farmer in the Midwest? But so I think it's a growing topic, and I definitely know that, like, as I learn more, I'm getting more comfortable bringing it up and talking to my peers and things like that. But it's definitely something that I think it's a touchy subject.
Right. I mean, there's no wrong answer, and there's probably a bajillion right answers, but, like, how do you think, you know, you and myself and Heritage Radio Network and all these other Food and Water Watch and these, you know, great organizations out there, how do we engage young people in this conversation in a way that's informative and productive and you know, maybe entertaining it at, you know?
Yeah, I think it's definitely growing harder because young people are so exposed to so much, you know, through media and stuff. But I think there's lots of opportunities. I think the social justice angle is such a big deal. People really care about equity and, you know, people being treated right. And I think also getting them out in the farm and getting them exposed. I feel like anytime once you get your hands dirty, and there's such beauty in agriculture and in vegetables growing, which sounds kind of silly, but I think it's like anything. Once you learn about it and once you get exposed to it, it's so much easier. So just finding ways to get in touch with kids through school, through, I don't know, we made like an animated report, like video for our Super Reads report, which makes the topic, you know, so much easier and accessible. It's 2 minutes long, and there's some pictures that it just makes the topic easier. So ways like that, I think, are definitely a good way to approach getting it out there.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to take a quick break. We're talking to Anna Meyer, and we're talking food, food access, food justice. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about what you're doing at Food and Water Watch and your summer of food and how that's going to affect your long-term plans. Stay tuned, guys, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to The In-Laws by The Ranch Hands on heritageradionetwork.org. Stay tuned for more Summer of Food with Eddie Shumard.
This is Chris Howell from Cane Vineyard and Winery, calling in from Spring Mountain above the Napa Valley. In our industrial world, most wines have become brands, but the wines I love are so much more. Fine wine is a civilizing substance that connects us to nature. It cannot be stamped out in a factory. If you're listening to this great show, you probably eat different. I urge you to drink different too. Go deeper. Cane5.com.
All right, welcome back. This is Eddie Shumard coming to you from HeritageRadioNetwork.org's amazing studios behind Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Today we're talking to Anna Meyer from Food and Water Watch about her summer of food. So, Anna, how does your studies at American University and work at Food and Water Watch sort of inform each other? Or do you find that one... Is there a balance? Are they completely sort of separate entities?
I definitely think they're connected. I mean, so my grad program has definitely been academic and, you know, reading the history and, you know, and things like that of policy and food and agriculture. But then my summer so far has been more about seeing it in action. And, you know, in a book, you can't see how quickly things happen. And it's just, it's constantly changing here at Food and Water Watch, and there's so much happening, and there's so much happening with food. And so being able to see it, like, almost in real time has definitely, you know, been a great experience.
And that's something I've found, like, talking to the students that I've talked to this summer, is that balance between theory and practice. And it might be a little bit more extreme in, say, an agricultural situation, but do you ever find yourself, you know, reading theory in the classroom or having read theory in the classroom, and then being in the real world and find the contradiction? Or do you ever have, like, that aha moment, like, oh my gosh, that actually, it works like that?
I definitely think it's a little bit of both. A lot of the theory stuff that we read is just so intense and, like, so acronym-filled and UN debates and things like that. And so, you know, it's definitely high level and sometimes very, like, disattached from everyday life. So, but there definitely are moments where you see it at play.
So, yeah, the, you know, academic reading and writing can sometimes be very heady. So where does this summer, in your summer at Food and Water Watch and this internship, how does this play into, or how does it fit into your larger academic goals in grad school, and then beyond that into your professional goals?
Yeah, so it's actually, it's part of our grad school program is to intern, which makes sense because I think it's such an important experience. And then I finish in May, and I'm really hoping to work for either a consumer watchdog organization like Food and Water Watch or an environmental nonprofit in the area of food and agriculture. I think there's so much being done, and it's a great field. And like Food and Water Watch I really agree with their stance. They don't take any corporate or government funding, which really allows them, you know, to speak the truth, I guess, without any concern for, you know, connections they might have. So I really hope that this kind of helps me go in that direction.
So
graduation,
right? So, you know, what are some of the, like the, you know, the takeaways specifically from this experience? You know, what are you going to take away from this experience that's going to inform you as you move forward?
I definitely learned a lot more about the relationship with media and how that comes to play. Although I was a communications major in undergrad, I did TV and film, so it was a little bit different, but it's kind of crazy, like the relationships you have to build with the media and with journalists specifically in order to really get the word out there and make sure that it's heard and it's heard fairly. So I definitely think that has been a great learning experience. And just learning the fast pace of it and that it's constantly changing and that you have to be kind of like on top of it is a huge, huge takeaway.
So, you know, you kind of started your academic career studying communications and media, and you're working in the communications, you know, media department there. But you're sort of studying the policy side right now in grad school. Do you see yourself shifting away from communications and media and more into a policy side, or do you see yourself, you know, staying focused in, you know, engaging consumers and young people and everyday people through media on these larger issues?
I don't really know. I'm kind of up in the air about it. I think media is fascinating, and it's really cool to see, you know, how a social movement can shift and how you can do that and help, you know, kind of charge that along. But there's, you know, there's so much research to do and so much that's happening with policy, so I'd really be happy kind of in either area. It'd be nice to kind of like to dip my feet in either bit of it and kind of see. I'd definitely like to see more about policy and learn more about it and see actually how it works and spend some time with that. But I do enjoy the communication side as well.
Right. You know, and it's, you know, we've all sort of been informed by media, whether we like to admit it or not. And so it does play like such a really large part in constructing our, you know, collective perceptions of the world around us. How do you, you know, craft a message or a pitch that, you know, a media outlet's gonna pick up and report on fairly. I'm having a really hard time talk today.
Okay, happens.
Yeah, right. You know, but like, you know, what are the, like, sort of your tricks, or like, how do you, you know, make sure that your story gets picked up instead of sort of the typical news fodder?
I think it's definitely about knowing your target. This has definitely been a learning experience for me this summer. But you have to know your journalist and know your outlet. There are definitely, you know, some outlets that we're not going to pitch stuff to because we know that it won't be covered fairly, and that's just the reality of it. But they're definitely, you can tell, you know, there's more progressive newspapers and you know, radio networks like this that are interested in the issue and are interested in reporting it. And so just trying to kind of focus it in that direction and making sure that it's something that they'll see and that they'll kind of see the perspective and see the greater picture with. And there's so many sides to it. So, like, you can pitch a food and ag story to someone who works on energy and make that connection there. So it's all about, you know, helping people see the connection and making sure that they see that it's relevant.
Right. You know, Food and Water Watch deals pretty directly with some of these like really big issues of access and equity in food and water distribution, and which, you know, kind of bleeds into poverty and food sovereignty. What do you think are some of these like really big issues today that your generation and those generations to follow should be focusing on?
I definitely think issues with industrial agriculture are huge. Things like GE labeling and country of origin labeling, and some of it's just about, you know, making sure that people have the choice to be informed and that they're, you know, acting out on that choice and that no one is prohibiting that choice, I think is a really big deal. And then Food and Water Watch is doing a ton of work with fracking right now. And I think that's a big issue that's coming up is, you know, oil and energy and how we move forward and what impacts it has on local communities. And it's such a hard thing because it's something that really affects people at a local level and kind of at a, you know, at a slow pace. If someone's drinking water is contaminated, that's not something that shows up, you know, the next day. It affects them for years. And so I think kind of like connecting with that and helping support movements to regulate and to protect the people around us.
Right. You know, it's interesting you mentioned water. I mean, food and water watch. But I feel sometimes like water gets sort of left behind when we talk about food and food issues. You know, what is it about, you know, what should we be concerned with water? I mean, that's one of those things that I think everybody, just like food, like the supermarket's always going to be filled with food. I don't need to worry about it. I can turn the handle on my tap and water is always going to flow out. What should we be thinking about when we're having a discussion about water?
Yeah, water is huge. I mean, we wouldn't have food without water. And the reality is we're growing, like California, almost all the food that we grow is irrigated. So, and it involves huge transportation systems to get that water to the mm-hmm. Central Valley to grow, you know, the fruits and nuts that are shipped everywhere. So it's really important. And a lot, yeah, water is huge. So making sure that it's still public access, preventing it from being taken over by private entities, huge, to make sure that the public has control of their water. And then also to make sure that it's safe and it's protected. It's so easy for water to get contaminated. It's out there and it happens from, you know, agricultural runoff to accidents to the energy industry. So making sure that the water is protected is huge, and it just needs to be part of the conversation and something that we really watch out for, because if we don't have water, we don't have water and we don't have food.
So. Right. Yeah, it's really kind of fascinating when you tuck into the whole water in the Western United States. It's fascinating and frightening to realize the sheer, you know, magnitude of the projects that we had to build to irrigate the Western United States. I think there's a fact. There's like 75,000 dams in the United States of America. Like none of the major rivers actually reach their destination anymore. It's dig into it, people. It's crazy stuff. How do young people engage in these issues? Like, what is the best way for them to affect change, to inform themselves? You know, where do they go? What do they read? And what organizations do they tap into to get involved?
There's so much out there. I definitely think the news is a good place to start. And there's so many books. I think the really important thing is to make sure you're informed, but to also question what you're reading. So to make sure that it's coming from a reliable, non-biased source. I mean, it's so easy to find reports that are published by industries, and it's kind of, you need to question that and not just believe everything you read. And so I definitely think there's ways to reach out. I would definitely encourage students to take a class on the environment, even a science class, and just learn about it. I took a water resources class in undergrad and read the book Cadillac Desert, which is like all about the history of California water. And it's like the most fascinating and frightening thing ever. It's crazy when you read about it.
Oh yeah.
So definitely take that step. And there are so many organizations out there, you know, like on a really local level or big national organizations like Food and Water Watch. And they're eager for people to get involved. They're eager for people to come into the office, to collect petitions, to attend movie screenings, to participate in rallies, to work on farms, to get involved in, you know, local schools. There's no end to the need for people to get involved. So there's so many opportunities out there. It's just, you know, taking that first step and looking into it and finding somewhere that you fit in and that you agree with.
Right. Well, you mentioned Cadillac Desert. I don't want to put you on the spot, but is there any? Have you been reading anything this summer in between? I'm sure your busy intern schedule at Food and Water Watch that, you know, is like a recommended summer reading, or do you have sort of like a book that you continually go back to and reference?
Yeah, I've been trying to catch up on a lot of reading. So I've been reading Foodopoly, which actually our executive director, Winota Hodder, wrote, and it's all about the consolidation of the food industry, and that's really fascinating if you're interested in food. But also I've been trying to catch up on a lot of Wendell Berry's work. And then one of my favorite books that I always go back to is the Sand County Almanac. I think it reminds you of the beauty of nature and that you should get in touch with it. So those are kind of my top picks.
Perfect. I think that's a perfect way to end this interview. Anna, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. I feel more informed. I hope our listeners feel more informed. You've been listening to another episode of Summer of Food on heritageradionetwork.org. We've been highlighting student leaders from across the country all summer. Remember, heritageradionetwork.org is a non-for-profit. So if you're on the website right now, go on that donate button. Give us a little support. Keep young people engaged in agriculture and the food issues. Anna, thanks so much for being on today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. It was great talking to you. All right, kids, take care. Have a great night. It's been Eddie Schumard with HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.